the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome to Business Rockstars. Joining me right now, Scott Fisher,
Hello.
Founder and partner at Select Management Group. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell everyone, what is Select Management Group?
So we are a talent management company and entertainment company, primarily working with digital talent, YouTubers, Instagram, social media stars, whatever you want to call them, helping them in every area of their career, books, TV, film, creating new businesses with them, just everything that they would ever want to do. And we also produce content.
Awesome. I'm so excited to talk to you about this today because everyone knows influencers are hot. They know that they should be adopting some of the tactics that they use, perhaps working with influencers, but it's a relatively new space. So there's so many questions around how it all works. So I'm excited to ask you those questions. First of all, how did the idea come about and how did you really start this company?
Yeah, so I met someone who was doing YouTube and I was so kind of confused by it all. And like, how do you make money? How do people watch you? But at the same time, I was kind of part of that generation as well. So I understood how it all worked. I just didn't understand how they kind of made a business out of it. Decided to work with them just kind of as a friend. I was in college. They were in college. I was producing a web series, put them on it, ended up deciding I wanted to get into management and sign them, create a company, started working with them, with their friends. It became something that I could actually make money with. I was working at Starbucks at the time. So the day I could make more money doing this instead of working at Starbucks, I was like, let's flip the switch and start a business. Signed them, their friends, ended up, you know, building an office of like 5 people, and then dropped out of college and kept it going.
That is a great story. I love it. So basically, you just started small with a couple clients and it just kind of organically grew from there.
Exactly.
And it sounds like for the most part, you were winging it. I mean, you were self-taught at first how to be a manager. So how did that work?
I always say when you have nothing to lose, you can find the most success because you don't know what, you're not thinking about all the ways you could fail or you can't pay the mortgage or your kids will be disappointed in you. It's like I had nothing going on. So it was like anything from there is going up.
Yeah. There are a lot of our entrepreneurs who are debating when is a good time to start a business. But hey, if you are young, I mean, I think the answer is anytime, whatever age you are, it's great, but definitely don't use your age against you if you are young, because sometimes that's the best time when you are inexperienced and can learn on the job and wing it and you don't have much to lose.
Yep. And with digital 7 years ago, there weren't any rules to learn really in talent representation for digital. It was like not a thing then. So I think I was able to get into it because I was able to kind of make it up as I went and write the rules rather than learning from someone who'd been doing it for 20 years.
So what were some of those rules that you quickly learned?
I think it's the same kind of ethos as an old school manager. It's like protect your client, make sure they're getting paid, make sure you have integrity and honesty. Make sure everyone you work with, you're treating them properly. Like just be a good person kind of 101. And then business-wise, you learn, you know, you do a couple of contracts, you learn how those work, you learn how a deal structure works. And once you do 5, 10, you've done it 100 times.
So, yeah. I'm sure that it was interesting navigating the guidelines of how to protect your clients because TV and film has had those guidelines set for so long.
Yeah.
So you know the standard pay and
usage
and all those terms, you know, within the industry. But then digital is like the wild, wild west.
Yeah.
So how did you learn what you were going to hold as a standard for your clients?
The interesting thing with digital is that talent, they now have the lion's share of the revenue, whereas in television, unless you're like an A-list star, you're still not making as much money as the network is. But in digital, the talent was able to kind of keep control from the very beginning. So I was always surprised when I learned in college that, you know, you might get a 5-10% royalty on something, whereas the digital talent see it more of the opposite, so that the network is taking 10% of what they're making rather than they're getting 10% of the pie.
Yeah.
So everything was kind of flipped. And I learned that, hey, like you can, if you ask for it and you own the audience, It's their content. It's their audience. They can kind of write the rules.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And then you, from there, when you had a few clients, started to really grow. And part of that growth opportunity came with moving to Los Angeles. So tell me some of the steps that you took in order to grow.
Yeah. So we built up the business in Canada, had a few employees, was always profitable, but you know, the sky's the limit with that stuff. So I actually got flagged at the border because I was traveling back and forth so much from Canada that I had to move here, like had to get a visa or they wouldn't let me back in the country.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of like rushed together and got a visa and basically created Select in the US, invested in it, and now work at the company as an employee.
Oh, funny.
Which is funny, of my own company. We kept going. Things just kind of keep happening. The talent grows, the business grows. So you sign more clients. We didn't want to sign tons of clients, but you sign a few more people that you really believe in. They grow 10 times, the business grows 10 times. So it's kind of just finding the right people, supporting them, and helping them keep what they're doing going so that we can build on top of that.
And that's probably the best way to grow is to grow organically, one client at a time, so you're not experiencing a ton of growing pains.
Yeah. And I would rather do one thing really well than try to do 100 things out of the gate and fail at most of them. And build the relationship with one client that can tell everyone how great you are rather than have 10 clients. It's like, yeah, I talked to him a couple times a month. He's fine. But I would rather have that kind of like champion for us, for me and the company. And then you create other, I guess, loyal customers out of that.
Yeah. Has that been the key to growing, is really nurturing your talent so that they refer other talent to you?
Yeah. I only personally work with around 8 clients, and I've only really had 8 to 10 at one time because I want to focus. But those core clients can help other managers who manage clients see what we're doing with them and join the company. And then I can support and work with them that way. And you just have good case studies. You prove success with a few people and other people see that, you know, you care, you did it right, you didn't compromise, and you can just kind of keep going from there.
I would imagine that's a really big thing for talent, is working with a manager that has high integrity and that you can trust.
Yeah.
Because we've all heard those bad stories.
Exactly.
So talent, really, you have to have their best interest in mind.
And when you're working with someone that's 18 years old, they've never made money in their life and their family doesn't have money, it's like they don't know how to handle all of that stuff. And you have to give them the right tools to be a good person, save their money, not get burnt out, keep like their mental health in check. There's a lot of things that people don't think about, even with influencers, that it can kind of get to their head and it can kind of really change their whole dynamic. It's kind of like a professional athlete. They go from making no money to their like $1 million contract the next day.
Yeah. So part of it is probably kind of being a psychologist and helping them stay grounded too.
And if I'm not living that example of treating people with respect, saving my money, just being a good person, like they're not going to either. So I think it's a lot of
leading by example
and, you know, treating them like a member of your family and just being together in the good or bad.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And you haven't had to raise any capital because you've been self-funded and profitable right away because you have gotten the chance to grow so organically. Was that always a part of the plan? Were you mindful of becoming profitable right away?
Yeah. I never wanted to take investment because I never wanted to be swayed by another entity's, you know, the way they do it or the people they need me to work with. So we never took money. And then part of that was just making sure that when I hire someone, they actually have a place in the P&L and we're not kind of overextending ourselves to have them in the company. Cash is always in mind when we're thinking about anything. And I would never just hire someone to have them and, you know, we'll figure it out later. It's always like, what do you bring to the table? Can we afford this? Does it make sense?
Yeah. And obviously, when you're making money, that means that your clients are making money. So it's a win-win. Yeah. It's the goal of everyone within your management group to make money, obviously, but not compromising their values or anything like that. So maybe you can speak to that, actually.
Yeah.
Because I know I have some influencer friends, and I know that's something that they sometimes struggle with, is accepting maybe a brand deal or a partnership, but not while compromising their values and being authentic. Can you speak to that?
I always tell my clients in the beginning, don't work with any brands, don't do anything, just focus on building the audience. If the beginning means a year, do that. If it means 2 years, do that. Once you hit critical mass, you can monetize that audience. If you have 1 million followers, you can make money. But I wouldn't worry about day one monetizing on the talent side, because you're not, A, the money isn't going to be meaningful enough to actually help you live. And it's also just, you're kind of selling yourself short and losing any leverage you had. And you're also probably not getting the best deals or the best partners that you would actually want to work with. So I always say, hold out, wait, focus on what you're good at, build your audience and go from there.
So ultimately it is about your audience as an influencer.
Yeah.
Because if they're not around, you don't have a brand that you can monetize.
And if they don't trust you, or they think you sold out, or you're just not interesting to them because you're living this life now that they can't relate to. Like, that's stuff is super important to be mindful of.
Yeah. So you have to constantly be adding value, however that may look for your given audience.
Yeah.
So you said once you reach critical mass, what would you define as critical mass?
I think it's different for everybody. What they see, either like their lifestyle being or where they see themselves. I have some clients that are so happy being kind of that, you know, if they have 500,000 followers and they're making money and they're happy, like they're not looking for more really. But I have other clients that like, when am I reaching 10 million subscribers? What's happening next? It just depends on the personality type.
And what may be your long-term goals are.
Exactly, yeah. But I think there's a space for everybody, and you know, the whole micro-influencer thing everyone's talking about. There's a, you know, you can make a living doing that for sure.
Cool. Well, we're going to talk about that micro-influencer thing everyone's talking about. And in general, what are some tips that you can take away from influencers, how to work with them? After this short break, we will talk about it all. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Have you heard what President Trump said recently?
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too.
Now you can watch Newsmax TV and get the truth about Trump from Bill O'Reilly, Mike Reagan, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, and more. Newsmax TV is America's fastest growing cable news channel, now in 70 million homes. Find Newsmax on DirecTV, Dish, Xfinity, Spectrum, Optimum, Fios, UVerse, and more systems. See Newsmax TV today. It's real news for real people.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its MBA and Business Analytics Master's degree programs offered 100% online. Learn more about the top-ranked W.P. Carey business degrees online. Text RANK to 79645. Again, that's RANK to 79645.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars, where we are continuing our conversation with the partner and founder at Select Management Group. And before we went to break, we talked about the micro-influencer. So for those who aren't familiar, if you could define who is the micro-influencer?
I mean, I guess it depends on the brand, where they see the micro coming in at the follower level. But it's anyone with a small audience that's super engaged. And the idea is that the brands don't have to either don't pay them at all or pay them a very small amount. And they can kind of scale that campaign by hiring 500 micro influencers to get the same reach as maybe one mega huge influencer.
I've heard some people define it as between 10,000 and 50,000 or 10,000, 100,000 followers.
I've even honestly seen people consider 500 followers micro influencers.
Really?
And like there could be like mothers that just have Instagram and kind of found a little bit of a following, and we'll talk about like a dish soap and the brands will pay them and have maybe 50 of those kinds of super micro influencers.
Interesting. I think the key though is that they have a niche audience, right? And so can you speak to, from the perspective of a brand and a company working with these micro influencers, maybe what are some of the benefits versus hiring a mega influencer?
Yeah, I'm biased because we're on the side of the mega influencer in a way, but they see the benefits as they're spending less money all of the time, but they're also kind of hedging their bets and not putting all their eggs in one basket with someone huge, because it could go very wrong. You know, you never know. Saving money, hedging their bets. And also they see the audience as more engaged and more kind of authentic because the person that they're hiring isn't seen as a celebrity, whereas a lot of the bigger influencers have kind of become mainstream celebrities in a way. So they're bringing something more authentic to the table.
Interesting. So on behalf of our entrepreneurs watching and listening, if they were to want to work with an influencer, it's micro, what advice do you have for them?
I would say look at your budgets really closely and figure out how much you want to spend from the get-go. Because if you've done your research, you'll either understand that it'll work for you or it won't. So really put a budget in place that you know you can spend and try something. Otherwise, if you do one-offs and you're just kind of figuring it out, you won't actually see any return. And one other thing is to hire an agency, an influencer marketing company, someone to help you handle it all. Not necessarily a company like ours, because we're on the talent side representing the talent. But if you hire an influencer marketing company, they can take your budget, tell you what you're going to get. They have the relationships with people like us to come to us and say, how do we do this deal with this client? Those would be the main two things.
And I would imagine it's really important to find talent that is in alignment with your goals.
Yeah.
And understanding what they represent, their voice doesn't match with your brand, the authenticity.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, what is it that you want out of this? Do you want exposure? Yeah. Or do you want sales?
Yeah. And you have to track it somehow, because otherwise, how do you know if it worked? And usually, even if they don't provide tracking links or have specific things, you can just see a lift in sales. And they usually attribute that to working with an influencer. We've seen like brands report to us like 140% increase on one shoe that one of our clients featured in a video. And there's no other way, you know, that she was the reason that happened.
So obviously every single entrepreneur needs to be on social media.
Yeah.
Whether or not they want to be an influencer is a side note.
That's an interesting world now. Like the entrepreneur influencer world is a whole thing. I've heard so many.
Yeah.
Brands.
Okay. So tell me what you've heard about that.
I mean,
that.
Brands are, I'd say like, what are you guys looking for? It could be like a footwear brand. And they're like, you know, our next thing is entrepreneur influencers. And we want to sign guys with businesses who have huge Instagrams and make YouTube videos about being an entrepreneur. It's an interesting world.
You can
kind of start a business and then become an influencer out of it, which is fun.
Yeah, that is really interesting. Well, regardless if that's your goal or not, we all know having a social media presence is really, really important.
Yeah.
There's a lot that we can learn from influencers to do it the right way. So for the entrepreneur, where would you say they should start with establishing that real, authentic social media presence?
I think having a handle for your company and for yourself is important, because you don't always represent the things you're talking about on your social media might not always be the exact same thing that you want your company to be kind of putting out there. It might be more personal, which it should be on your personal social media. It shouldn't always be business all the time. That's a big thing, kind of separating it so you can also link back to your business and grow that as a separate entity outside of yourself.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
A lot of times entrepreneurs ask that question. Should I be having two accounts? And sometimes entrepreneurs, their name is their business.
Yeah.
But let's just assume that you have a different name for your business. You're suggesting you have two accounts.
Yeah. Unless, like you said, if someone's kind of, if they're a consultant or something, of course, it should just be you.
Yeah.
But if you're building a separate entity to build value into that business, you should have a separate presence.
And then what? Once you have the two accounts, any advice for maybe what to post, how to really, really establish that voice that influencers do so well?
Yeah, I think it's about sharing things that you think are relevant, that you think people you want to connect with would be interested in, sharing relevant updates about what you're doing, speaking truthfully about things that people aren't used to hearing. So how tough this was or how this failed, but you're looking forward to doing something else. Just like bringing some reality into it. Because otherwise, if I go on someone's account and it's just like, killing this project, this was amazing. We have so many cool
Life's
projects
awesome.
Coming
Hashtag
up in the future.
Blessed.
It's like, great. Everyone has amazing moments. Everyone does. But everyone has crappy moments. So just being honest with people and letting them see the vulnerable side of you. Obviously not super vulnerable, but you know, giving people some context.
I like that word vulnerable. And I see that doing very well on social media.
Yeah.
Maybe you can confirm what I've been sensing.
Yeah.
And that's that there's this huge push on social media for being more vulnerable. I think when it first started and, you know, the very first influencers, it was a little bit more aspirational in nature, looking up to the Kim Kardashians of the world, and looking at how perfect their lives were and just admiring it. But now I think people are really craving that authenticity a little bit more and that realness. And so giving people some insight into your day beyond the highlight reel.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even, like you said, have to be that it was a bad day or crappy, although it might be, but even just offering some realness, like a blooper or a mundane moment or something like that. So can you confirm, is that a trend? Is
Confirmed.
That real? Okay.
It's all true. Our clients say that Instagram is the highlight reel. That's like the perfect world. It's not real. It's all fake on the profile, but then their story is where you get the truth and you get to see the behind the scenes and they're taking selfies from down here. And then Twitter is even more so of that because it's just so ephemeral that it's just going, and you see different sets of people.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let's talk about the platforms, because it is really important to honor the various platforms and the various tools on those platforms when knowing what to post. So I love that you shared a little bit more perfect put together in the feed of Instagram, a little bit more raw behind the scenes Instagram story. And we are running out of time, so we're not even going to touch on Snapchat because bottom line is Instagram stories really took that over. So forget about Snapchat for this conversation, at least. But we'll end with this. Facebook versus YouTube. What do we need to know about the two different platforms and their relevancy?
I think YouTube has done such a good job of nurturing their creators. They have amazing like summits and they treat them really well with a lot of great communication. And I really praise them for keeping that going. Facebook is just getting into building those relationships. So who knows if someone goes to Facebook and they have a great experience and they decide, hey, I'm going to put all my eggs in this basket. Facebook could be the new place for independent creators. They'll definitely have a shot at long form scripted because they're just trying so hard at it. But I don't see everyone moving over to YouTube or everyone moving over to Facebook. It'll kind of be
They'll coexist and have their own little nuances.
Yeah, and there might be some people that have amazing audiences on Facebook and nothing on YouTube or vice versa.
Interesting. Well, thank you so much for all the insight. Yeah. This has been so interesting.
Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's. So thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 0707 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 0707.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining us right now in the house is Stephanie Boxer Baum. She is the founder of All Have the Fries.
Yes.
Tell us about your company.
Thanks for having me. All Have the Fries is designed to educate and inspire people on how to have a healthy relationship with food. It's really about what we kind of say is it's not the diet, it's you. Because it's not, you know, you can eat what, you know, people get really obsessed with what their diet should be. But that's not going to address how you relate to food, how you relate to your body. And so our job is really creating content to address those types of issues.
I love that. I hear so many people that are, you know, trying to lose weight. They go, you know, oh, well, I tried all the diets or I'm on a diet.
Yes.
That's so such a lame thing because it's like you just have a diet. It's your dietary, right? It's like what you're eating on a consistent basis.
Right.
And yeah, I love this whole thing. I was like, I'll have the fries. What does this have to do with? And I get it now.
Well, and I mean, for me, like I love French fries, right?
Me too.
So, and a lot of people have sort of that forbidden food, right? You know, where you go to a restaurant and they say, do you want the salad or the fries? And when you watch people, it's like their mind kind of
the
says like,
thing.
Yeah, right. It's like, no, I'll have the salad, but you really want the fries. And so it's really just kind of this metaphor of like, you know, you don't have to have the fries, but if you have them, it's not going to kill you. You know, so how do you get people to take a look at these things? And our sort of philosophy is that even, you know, it's about what works for you. So if you're vegan, you're paleo, you're whatever you want to be.
Yeah, true.
Great. But I think that what we found by talking to so many people is that they have these sort of very restricted dietary
plans. That's why most people fail.
Correct.
Because they put the barriers too strict.
Correct.
And then they go, oh, I can't do this or it's wrong.
Right.
It's like, no, just be healthy and go to the gym and practice the habit of it.
Right.
But allow yourself a little flexibility and you'll stick to it. Make it part of your lifestyle.
Right. Well, and a lot, and I mean, for you, right, it just kind of seems easy. A lot of people, there's a lot of just background history issues, things that they don't even realize. It's like why they just ate 5 cookies because they're not aware that that's how they're coping with the bad day they had, right?
Yeah. People aren't aware of the trigger response.
Yes. Correct. Yeah, they have no idea. Yeah. So I think being...
Anytime I get mad, I get the ice cream. And right. They don't really put the
they
two
don't
together.
Yeah, they don't even see that at all. And yeah. So I think that what we've seen is a lot of those connections being made. And then you can get to the diet. We always say that it's about wrapping gentle nutrition around what you like. Like a lot of times people forget the satisfaction factor of food. You know, there was a woman I asked, and I said, well, how many hours a day do you think about food? And she said, well, I don't know, like 23 out of 24. You know, and that's too much time. There's like a lot you can do with your life. And so our goal is to kind of get people back where food takes up, you know, 10% of your mental space, and then you're off doing more exciting things instead of obsessing kind of over this type of stuff.
It's crazy because I don't even think about how you could possibly be like literally addicted to it where you're thinking about food like 24, like 23. That means she's sleeping and thinking about food. She's dreaming about eating food.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. Well, you're an attorney as well.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Sure.
How are you balancing the two of these? Because I know being an attorney is difficult and I know being an entrepreneur is difficult. You're doing both.
Right.
You're balancing both of these things. How are you doing that?
I mean, I think it's just about passion. You know, I mean, I'm really, really committed to helping people. You know,
with all have the fries
and understanding that those dynamics of themselves. And so, and I love being a lawyer and I love helping people in that way too, from a business standpoint. So it kind of combines both worlds in some ways, you know, because as a lawyer, you're constantly giving strategic advice and counseling people. And so it's basically taking that skill set and putting it over sort of into a different topic. Mm. It's a lot of, you know, at 2 a.m., you know, work sessions, so to speak, because there's only so many hours in a day. But I think for any entrepreneur, if you love what you're doing, it doesn't seem so much like work, basically.
How does somebody find what they love what they're doing? I find so many people say, I'm just trying to find my passion. Yeah. I'm trying to find my purpose. And I'm always like, I'm like, where are you looking?
You're looking.
I'm like,
you're
looking in the closet? Are you like, you're looking when you're driving around the road? Like, you're never going to find your passion. You're never going to find your purpose.
Right.
I think you have to create it. But what's your advice for people out there that are struggling to find it?
Okay, so there's this book called The Desire Map that I tell everyone about. It's by this woman, Danielle Laporte.
I've heard of it, but tell us.
Okay, so So anyway, and the reason why I start with that is because I think sometimes when you just have no idea and you've tried and you're, you know, I talk to a lot of, you know, people that are sort of in that same boat. They're in a job. Mm-hmm. They aren't that happy, but they're like living life and they're like living for the weekend, but they know they want to change. And it's like, that's the story that every time you see them, whether it's once a month, once a week, it's like, it's that same story, right? So sometimes it's about resources. Like here, well, why don't you look at this and see if it triggers anything for you, you know? Yeah. So her thing is, you know, is really about designing goals with soul and figuring out how you want to feel every day and mapping to that. And sometimes, you know, I'm just a big believer of like, what do you like to do in your life? And some of those things aren't going to turn into a business, but some of them could, you know? So at least if you start somewhere of identifying like on a day-to-day basis what you really love, and if your answer to that is I have no idea, then I think you've got to kind of go a little bit deeper.
People do know what they love to do. You just say, well, if you did, and you couldn't be wrong, what would you say? And they usually go, oh, well, if I'm not going to be judged, then I'd say this.
Totally.
It's like, there you go.
Right. Like years ago, there was a woman I met who I asked, we were sort of in this dialogue, and I said, well, what is it that you'd really like to do? And she's like, I don't know. And I said, well, just really think about it. And her thing, she said, well, I really want to write a children's book.
See, she knew.
Yeah.
People's knee-jerk reaction is, well, I don't know.
And it's like, And at a certain point, I think, you know, it's like life happens, right? You're paying bills, you're doing this, you're doing that. And so my goal is to remind people of like, even if you're doing it 30 minutes a day as a starting place, and I said to her, I was like, look, if that's what you want to do, get some children's books, start researching it, even if it's 20 minutes, and you can just see in their eyes when they start to kind of think, well, okay, like maybe I'll at least try that as kind of a starting place, you know?
Reminds me of the event I was just speaking at. My buddy Cole put on this phenomenal event called Thrive.
Uh-huh.
And this kid came up to me and he was like, oh my God, your speech was incredible. It really inspired me. I'm trying to do something similar. I want to create content. I want to have a YouTube channel. I got to get my website up and all this other stuff. And I was like, I just heard you in like 1 second tell me three excuses about why you haven't started yet.
Right.
And he's like, well, I just need this and I need this and I need this. And I was like, no, you don't need any of that. Do you have a smartphone on you? And he's like, I do. And I go, film videos of all the speakers, whoever will agree, and people in the audience giving you the 30-second, 60-second pieces of content that you're waiting for.
Right.
And he came back up to me later, and of course he filmed me.
Yeah.
But he came back up to me later and he was like, you know, I've got 10 already done in one day.
Right.
He's like, I'm going to upload them on Facebook and social media. And I was like, That was it. And it's like what you just said, right? They just need to get started. Right. They don't need to wait until it's perfect.
Totally.
Founder of All Have the Fries, Stephanie Boxerbaum's joining us. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Three things all entrepreneurs need to know when they're getting started. You've been an attorney. You've been somebody who's part of a startup. You got your own business going right now. So for the person who's just getting started,
right,
and there's a lot of them,
right,
or the person that wants to get started,
right,
what do you feel like are three things they need to know?
Well, I think, like we said, find the passion, right? That's kind of the first place, and see if you can wrap the business around it. Okay. The next is, I think, set manageable goals, because I think what happens is the trajectory is you find the passion. You think you can figure out a way to do the business, and then you're like, well, so overwhelmed by this idea of what it needs to become and where it needs to go, and that then everyone just stops.
They get caught up in the how-to and the
correct,
what.
Right.
And I think it goes back to the passion. If you have a big enough why,
right,
you're going to push through, you're going to figure it out.
Well, and even sort of from a goal-setting standpoint, you're expecting where it's like every day is the biggest meeting and it's the biggest company growth. And it's like that's going to set you up where then it's feeling like nothing's happening. And I think that you have to kind of start a manageable goal process, and then that sort of keeps you in it day to day, and there's big wins happening all the time. Mm-hmm. And then the last piece really, I think, is putting together a great team. You know, starting with yourself and understanding what your skill sets are and where you kind of sit with it, and then sort of who are those people that can help to complement that as well.
So for the people out there who know they need to start capitalizing on short form videos, know they need to start writing blogs, know they need to start being information marketers, providing free value out there so that people go, I'm looking for, I don't care if it's plumbing, and they find free information about, you know, before you hire a plumber, the seven things you need to know.
Yeah.
Provided by, you know, the plumbing service near you. Whatever it is, people need to start being content creators so they can get inbound marketing, be more preeminent, just be more well known.
Yep.
You get that.
Sure.
But a lot of people struggle with that.
Right.
So what's your advice for the person who is sitting on the fence, like the story I gave about the kid, right?
Right.
Well, I'm waiting for my website.
Right.
Well, I'm going to put together my Facebook page. Well, you know, I don't have that camera, the lighting yet.
Right.
Well, you know, I don't know how to do it.
Right.
What's your advice for those people and those excuses?
I mean, I think that kid was lucky he met someone like you that could just say, get your iPhone, go interview people, and just do 10 of them, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the same place I sit in too, is for anybody, if you have a message, get your iPhone, turn it on, you know, and
post it on your social media.
Yeah, and see, I mean, the good news about digital media is you know very quickly what's working and what's not. And so you can try different formats, you can see what works, you can see what doesn't. If you think it's the dumbest idea, do it anyway. It doesn't matter. If it doesn't work, you can take it down. People may love it.
Very rarely is your first probably 100 articles and videos or anything like that going to be anything that even moves the needle.
Right.
But you'll start getting likes and comments and shares.
Totally.
And you'll get engagement and people, oh, I love this, great job.
Right.
And then, you know, you'll probably start to get some haters as well if you're really being authentic and sharing your story.
Right. You know, for us, we've really gotten to a place that you just can't be judgmental. If somebody has their mindset and they want to share your opinion, their opinion on whatever they think, that's great. And then you just have to keep moving forward and staying positive about your own message and what you're trying to push, you know?
Yeah. Fantastic advice. Because so many people are going through that. I want to talk about aha moments. I feel like something that I've become a big advocate of and I started integrating in this show is aha moments.
Right.
I feel like if you could sit with, you know, Tony Robbins, Oprah Winfrey, Steve Jobs, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, Richard Branson, whoever, all of these successful people, whoever your ideal successful people are, and you can have a book about their aha moments in life and in business.
Yeah.
It could have taken them 10 years, 30 years, millions, billions, money made, money lost, to have this aha moment about life or about business. I don't know about you, I want to read that book.
Right, right.
So I'm curious now, when guests come on the show like yourself, I want to know one of your aha moments from life or from business, so we can collapse the time, energy, and money that it took you to have that aha moment.
Sure. I mean, I think for me, you know, whenever you're going to start out on a business venture and it's about spreading a message that you really believe, right? There's like a moment where you kind of have to go through that space, kind of what we were just talking about, that there are going to be people that aren't going to like it. Or like, they're not going to agree with it, or they're not going to be into it. And so my plan was always to call it I'll Have the Fries, because I loved that and it really maximizes on kind of just the overall messaging. And I started doing workshops, but because I'm into yoga and these things, one of the workshops kind of integrated this idea of love food, love life, love yourself. Mm. And I decided, I'm not going to call it all of the fries. I think maybe that's too, like, people don't eat French fries. Like, some people don't like that. I should make it about loving yourself and loving what you do. And I realized sort of that's just, you have to tap back into your own gut instinct and recognize when you just want to like stick to your guns. And so I'm back to I'll Have the Fries, and that totally got rid of that. And I've accepted that in those moments where you're like, well, more people will like it if I change it. You can't.
You can't do that. You gotta stick with your guns.
Gotta stick with your guns. Yeah, exactly.
I love it. Well, I'll have the fries too, Stephanie.
Okay, good.
Thanks so much for coming
on the
show.
Thank you so much.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
So you sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it works. No wonder more than 400,000 people are doing this now. And look, whether you're single or married or you have kids, this can make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. Just think what you could do with $500 a month that can cover a car payment or pay back loans or whatever. Join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Find out more. The MediShare people are so easy to talk to. They can answer any questions. They're super friendly. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
4 out of 5 employers who post a job in ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. ZipRecruiter. The smartest way to hire. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to this exclusive web address, ziprecruiter.com/free. That's ziprecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining us right now is Frank Maringel. He's the president and CEO of Rise. Good to have you with us. Recap first what your company does.
Mark, we are changing the way 3D printing is designing and manufacturing products out there. We have a new innovative patented technology called APD, augmented polymer deposition, that is going to create real end-use parts in the 3D printing marketplace. Today, 3D printing is done only in prototyping, and we're going to move that into the manufacturing space.
So we were just talking about product market fit. How do you know when you're going to bring a product out into the marketplace?
Yes.
That's a mistake I see a lot of small businesses make, even big ones, but especially small ones. They spend their time, their energy, their money doing R&D, doing product development, and then they try to go out and they try to market this out into the space, so to speak. Yes. And then they find out that maybe the product market fit is off, the message to market match is off. There could be a lot of different things for why a company doesn't successfully launch a product. How are you guys confident that what you're doing is going to get your product out into the marketplace and be successful, you guys?
Yeah, so we are industry leaders, industry experts, I guess, if I can use that term. And so we know the 3D printing industrial market space. We are coming to market in a few steps. So we've talked to those leaders in the industry that will be our customers, and they've guided us to what the industry needs in the short term and in the long term. So in the short term, there is a need for the product that we're coming out with to solve the limitations of today's 3D printers in prototyping and manufacturing tooling. Today, prototyping is done in the lab, and not in the engineering desktop. And that's like 2D printing, something that the industry wants to solve. The lab is fine. It's great to have a 3D printing lab, but the ability to have a printer that's right next to the user is more important. If you think about your laser 2D printer, it's the exact same situation. That why would you want to go down to a printing room when you can print a laser a document right next to your computer?
Which is fantastic comparison, because I remember at the end of the day, years and years and years ago, people used to say, oh, well, we're never going to have printers.
Yeah.
Those are just for businesses. And I feel like it's the same thing happening in the 3D space. People are saying, you know, oh, we're never going to have a 3D printer. That's just going to be for prototyping.
Yes.
That's just going to be for this. And pretty soon, I'm sure in 10 years or 15 years, the majority of people that, you know, also have printers will also have 3D printers. You were asking a question before the cameras were rolling, saying, you know, why do you think that the 3D printing bubble has bursted? Why do you think that it's not being adopted as fast as it probably should be? Why is it taking a long time? So why don't you answer that question for us?
Sure. So first, it hasn't burst. It's burst only for the consumer side.
The stocks that we were talking about,
yes.
3D Systems and Stratasys.
So they were overblown
from
a price standpoint because they were building on the hype that every consumer would have one. That may be down the road 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
But today, 3D printers are going to be amazing growth for industry. The consumer might bring it home, but I think several steps along the way before they bring it home. For example, you might be able to print with a RISE printer, spare part replacement. So if you break something, the manufacturer won't have to store that part. They'll be able to print it for you. Mm-hmm. And then the progression of that is that you'll be able to send to Home Depot your part design, and they'll be able to print it for you. And then the third step in that is that you'll have one at home with the quality of all those other systems to be able to print it at home.
Let's talk about strategy of preeminence.
Yes.
How are you guys differentiating yourselves? Because at the end of the day, I feel like companies that ultimately succeed and become industry, you know, Goliaths versus the small companies that we maybe don't hear of, or the small companies that get acquired, they have a strategy of preeminence.
Yes.
So my question is, how are you guys setting up a strategy of preeminence to make sure that you become the dominant brand?
Yes. So first we have the IP that's amazing. So that's the first, that's an important thing. We have a team that knows the industry and is experienced. So hopefully we're not going to learn from our own mistakes. We can learn from our mistakes from our past.
Yeah.
We know the problems of today's 3D printers. For the low-hanging fruit, our printer solves those problems. People are excited to use our printer because it's saving them almost 100% of the time. It's saving them twice the cost. Today's 3D printers on post-processing cost $25,000 to $50,000 a printer just to get a part from the printer to usable. Then headcount is 2 to 3 times. Facilities are 2 to 3 times. It's a lot of expense. I didn't even mention environmental concerns. Today's 3D printers are environmentally wasteful. They produce a lot of waste.
The ones that have been around for 20 years.
That's right. Okay. There's a lot of material that is wasted, both alcohol, sodium hydroxide, a lot of waste in the process to get a 3D printed part. And that's why they're vented. That's why they're in labs. That waste is something that we should try to do without. And RISE has solved that problem. So we have zero emissions and zero waste. Everything that is a residual of our process can be recycled. So really, I don't want to say we're a green printer, but we are environmentally safe enough to be used outside of the 3D printing lab.
Well, I think you answered it perfectly, because there's so many ways that you can separate yourself to be a preeminent brand. One of the ways can just be environmentally clean.
Yes.
And you also mentioned, you know, 3D printing's been around a long time. A lot of people don't know that. For sales and marketing and for partnerships, how do you guys go about that? I feel like they're probably not small deals. You're probably not selling, you know, as you said, B2C, you're doing B2B. So those are probably large, important partnerships and deals.
Yes.
How are you guys structuring those? And why are they choosing you?
Sure. So they're choosing us because of the value proposition, but they're informed from a few different mechanisms that we have. We're hiring accomplished salespeople that are going to go to the Fortune 500 and sell to the executive. So we're selling top down from the Fortune 500 standpoint, from the long tail of marketing leads. And we're going to do a lot of marketing, a lot of branding, a lot of lead generation for that long tail of those leads, the one-offs, those that are less than Fortune 500. We're going to sell through very efficiently through inside sales and sales tools that allow us to sell without having direct contact with the customer. It's amazing how people will buy a 3D printer from seeing a part, from talking about value proposition, and from getting a proposal from the manufacturer. So that is the mechanism.
That's amazing. Frank, pleasure having you on the show with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This information is given with the understanding that neither the host nor the station is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.